Mackenzie, I have a story I want to tell you.
What do you want to tell me?
So the other day,
yeah,
I sat down,
mm-hmm.
and you know how I love my morning paper?
Yeah.
Well, I was sitting down, Edie brought me my morning paper.
Oh, thank God, yeah.
And there was a beautiful little article.
Yeah.
Do you want to know what it said?
What did it say?
It said that we're sponsored by Overcast.
What?
An independent podcast app that embraces the open world of podcasting instead of locking it down.
Wait, I saw that too. It also said there's no exclusives,
mm-hmm.
no premium content,
yeah.
no paywalls, just a great podcast app for everyone.
And it also said that get it for free in the App Store.
Liz!
Mackenzie, is that you?
Hi.
See,
Wait, can you see me?
Let me put on my glasses.
Put on your glasses.
That is
me.
You!
It's me. It's been so long.
It's been forever.
Can you believe we are in season 2 now?
It just feels like 5 months ago. We were just starting season 1.
Wow. Oh, should we say, I just realized we should say who we are now. We have a new name.
Yeah,
Some of you that are our loyal listeners may have noticed we have a new name. We are now Wisteria Gaze.
Oh, yes. A delicious little name.
A delicious little
for
name
some
change.
Delicious little kings.
We were joking, like, what if we just change our name every season?
Yeah.
That'd probably be difficult.
Season 3 is a Martha Huber.
Martha Huber. Oh, what did someone call us on Twitter? Martha Huber Propaganda Podcast.
Yes,
that's season 3. Yeah. We are now Wisteria Gaze, and that's it. Everything else is the exact same. So
yeah.
Don't worry about it. But hey, we have a new name. We're all fancy and shiny.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. And we're in season 2.
We are in season 2.
I'm excited to start season 2. So we are officially at the point where you have not seen anything.
No, I watched this episode with fresh little baby
eyes.
I stole a baby's eyes.
You stole a baby's eyes and you watched the episode with them. Just like first impressions before we get into it. How did you feel about the season premiere?
I liked it.
I did too.
I thought it was fun.
It was pretty fun.
I missed watching the show and I
Me
liked
too.
I liked like going in fresh.
Yes, we went a little bit without watching the episode and I was like, I'm sad. I miss watching Desperate Housewives.
I wanted to watch more after.
Oh, I can't wait to watch episode 2. We haven't even talked about episode 1 and I'm excited to watch episode 2.
How did you feel?
I liked it. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
I was like, I know the big parts of season 2 because obviously I've watched it before, but it's been a while since I've watched it. So I'm actually excited to remember some of the smaller moments because there's a lot that I don't remember as well. So.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited. I thought it was a great season premiere. Do you want to dive on in?
Oh, yes.
Okay, let me get into my little top of show facts. This episode premiered September 25th on, what? September 25th, 2005. There we go. It was written by Jenna Bans and Kevin Murphy and directed by Larry Shaw. Basically, a bunch of people we've had write episodes before. And this episode was watched when it premiered by 28 million people.
Oh,
and it
wow.
is still, I guess, spoiler alert for all 8 seasons, still it is the second highest rated episode in the entire series of like people
wow.
that watched it. Like,
what was the first again?
The season 1 finale.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the number one. That was like, they had like 30 million.
They wanted to know what happened.
Exactly. So those 30 million people mostly came back. And I never got my Sondheim watch.
Oh
my God.
We're canceled.
Oh, we're canceling the podcast.
Please, everybody, get it trending on Twitter.
Oh my God.
Wisteria Gaze canceled.
Wisteria Gaze is canceled. Oh my God. It looks like next comes from Pacific Overtures, which is a musical I know nothing about. That's Sondheim watch. A really anticlimactic Sondheim watch because I did no research this time.
Well,
next time we'll get
season 2, episode 2. So we got two.
Yeah. We're going to get all the research, but that's like my normal little top of show stuff. Feels good to be back.
It really does.
I love doing this show with
yes.
you. Oh, do you want to say what we open up on? I feel like it's only right.
I'm ready to get into it. I got my little water shoes on.
You have the water shoes on?
We open up on a season familiar, a series familiar.
Series familiar.
Ida Greenberg.
Your girlfriend.
My girlfriend, my GF.
Ida.
And we're getting Ida backstory.
A whole monologue about Ida.
Yes, which I never thought would happen.
Holy shit, this is so much Ida content.
Yes. But we find out that Ida Greenberg likes her liquor.
She's an alcoholic. Like, yes. A full-on alcoholic, yeah.
And there's this whole big monologue about her and her relationship with drinking. And then
yes.
Mary Alice talks about how there is a moment of despair which made her challenge God to quench her thirst.
She just was like, fuck you, God.
Yeah.
Make me stop.
Yeah, make me sober. You won't. You won't.
Try it, God. Fucking try it.
Yeah. And then we cut to Mike walking into his house, and Zach is there with a gun. Bongo's there.
Bongo's upset. Yeah. Little Bongo.
And with Zach distracted by Mike walking in, Susan just tackles
him. Just fucking tackles him, yeah. And I also wrote...
I wrote an action star.
An action star, Susan. She's bleeding for some reason.
Yeah,
how
I don't know.
She jumped on Zach and then she's bleeding from
the
face.
Maybe she got hit in the face with the gun?
Maybe. Because then she gets the gun out of his hand, right? But then Bongo like tries to rip Susan's leg off. And I was kind of howling. I thought that was very funny and I don't know why. I know it's not a funny scene, but the physicality of Bongo like... ripping at this actor's leg was very funny to me.
I was so worried she was gonna shoot Mike when I was watching this.
Oh my god.
I was
god.
Like, oh my god, is she gonna shoot Mike?
That would have been so intense. Because
that's something I never even thought of, even in the season one wrap up, is that Mike actually gets shot. And I was like thinking about that
Mike
after.
Mike fully got shot in the first season by that man.
Yeah.
Then that would have been the second time he got shot. Oh my god.
And it won't be the last. This is my prediction.
Everyone's gonna get shot.
Yes.
But she does pull the trigger and it shoots out the window perfectly at the whiskey that Ida is holding. And I wrote in my notes, at Liz, I'm so happy your GF is safe.
You know what? We've been fighting a little bit and like, I'm just glad that she's realized.
What if she had just shot Ida?
Like, that would have been wild.
Like, what if God was like, you want me to stop it? I'll just kill you. Like, what if
Susan, your death count is now two.
Like, what if this season premiere was just Ida getting shot?
Oh my god.
That would have been insane.
What if, like, you know how we have, like, the Susan does her job count, which it's only happened
twice.
I'm not counting the card because we didn't see her make it.
You're right.
What if we have a Susan death count?
Like, how many people Susan's killed?
Yeah.
Because it is definitely, as someone mentioned in our Instagram comments recently, the guy who Edie was sleeping with who fully died of asphyxiation, Susan did that.
Yes.
And then, yes, if she had killed Ida, that would have been two. But Zach just, like, leaves. He just runs away, I guess.
Yeah.
He just gets scared and runs off.
And then we find out it's been a year.
Yeah. Also, I was actually shocked at how quickly they resolved the Zach gun thing.
Yeah.
It felt a little too quick. It was like, this was the season one cliffhanger.
Well,
and then they do it in like 2 seconds. It's over.
If you said that they had that scene ready to go for the end of season one, I mean, they probably...
No, there was a different scene they
had.
Oh,
never mind.
Yeah. It was the ending scene of this episode with the Applewhites. That was almost the ending of season one.
Oh.
Yeah.
That would have been... Goosebumps. That would have been cool.
They almost, I guess, you know, spoiler alert for later in the episode, the final scene with the Applewhites going into the basement, that was almost in the season one finale.
Oh, wow.
But then I think they wanted to hold their cards a little closer with the reveal that the Applewhites are
yes.
up to something.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have no clue. But yeah, it's been a year
since
Mary Alice died.
Nobody's cleaned her urns because there's two urns there, I noticed.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of cobwebs.
There's cobwebs covering the Young house. Did Paul not sell the house? Did he just fucking leave?
I don't know, man.
Like, is the house just sitting there with no one living in it?
Well, no, because Zach's been going in and out.
I guess why they're cobwebs.
I don't know.
That was a little weird because it's like, yes, it's been a
it's
year.
It's to show that time has passed.
It's been a year since her death, but the season one was that year. So
yeah.
It's like, weird.
Who knows, man?
But she talks about sort of all the ways the lane has grown since her death. Kids growing up, new neighbors moving in. Edie's house is almost done.
Yeah.
Finally. Fucking 8 years later.
Well, a year later.
Whatever. Edie's house is almost done. I wrote, I love Edie commanding this construction site for
yes.
some reason. Being like, give me those plans. What are you doing? Like, why is Edie?
She's like, I'm a real estate agent. That means I know how to build a house.
Yeah, like, why is Edie fully the foreman of
yeah.
this, like, construction? construction site? Like, listen, why?
When you go to real estate school, they teach you how to construct a whole house.
that's real estate school 101. Yeah,
that's first day shit. And then we cut to Bree, and we find out that Bree hasn't even called her friends yet to tell her.
No.
To tell them.
Yeah.
That Rex is gone.
It seems like she's waiting, and we find out, like, for 9 a.m.? I guess that's, she doesn't want to be a bother, maybe?
Maybe, but that's, it's also, like, sometimes I do stuff like that, where if I have to make a phone call, sometimes phone calls can be really anxiety-inducing for me.
No, same.
And I'll just be like, okay, it's 7:03 at 7:15. I will make the call.
Yeah, no, for sure. I, like, go through all the scenarios of what the other person could possibly respond to me,
yeah,
so I can think up all of my responses to, yeah, what they might say. I get very
So it could
anxious.
Also be that, where she's just like, okay, 9 a.m., I'm going to give myself until 9 a.m., and then I'm going to make the call.
Yeah. But she's just kind of waiting.
Yeah.
And we quickly cut to Susan in the hospital with Julie. I also...
She's grown up.
She's grown up before our eyes are little baby.
And she's going to keep growing up.
I love
if
her.
If this show kills Julie, in the last season...
I'm going to drive to Mark Cherry's house and I will kill him personally. If he touches a hair on Julie's head...
Yes.
7 years ago when the show ended, I'm going to kick his ass.
Because I believe if there was a time to do it, it would be season 8.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. I hope she is okay.
Yeah, me too.
I love her. Hey, we got her now. We got her now. A cop arrives. Also, did you recognize the cop?
Yeah, it was Drake Bell.
Yes. Can you fucking imagine? No, you played L.A. Noire, right?
Yeah.
He was the coroner in L.A. Noire.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because you know how they did, like, actual, yeah, actors? Like, so they when he walked in, I was like, oh, it's the coroner from L.A. Noire,
yeah,
which is
I
a great game.
I gotta replay that game.
I have it on our Xbox.
A-cab, but I gotta replay that game.
A-cab, but I gotta play that game, though.
But I'd love to solve a mystery.
Yeah, truly, L.A. Noire is a great fucking, yeah, game. So he wants to get a statement from Susan about Zach. I wrote that it was a little weird to me that Mike notably, like, easily lies about where she got the lip injury.
Yeah.
I was like, why would he lie about that if the statement is about Zach? I mean, we find out why later, but.
And also, like, why would Susan jumped in, right? And was like.
Yeah, Susan, or I think that, like, Mike was being like, you know, he's a kid, he's fine, and Susan was like, no, he's crazy.
Yeah.
So Mike was trying to downplay it, and Susan kept jumping in, even though her lip was busted, so she wasn't able to talk very well. Susan kept jumping in and being like, no, he's a bad kid, he's crazy.
And that Mike was kind of like, I'll fill in the blanks for you if you just come with me outside.
Yeah. Julie.
Detective
Jules. She walks out to get her mom some more water, and she overhears Mike talking to the cop, and Mike is, like, fully downplaying it and making it seem,
oh,
like,
yeah,
Susan's being dramatic.
Yeah.
When Susan's face is busted open.
Yeah, and she was held at gunpoint for hours.
Hours. And so he's, I mean, we know why, right? It's his son. We know this, but Julie and Susan don't. So it just seems like Mike is weirdly taking Zach's side.
Yeah. And then we cut to some of the most wildest shit I've seen. Gabby comes out of the shower to rose petals everywhere leading to the bed. John Tucker
just chilling.
Is chilling. He's shirtless and stuff. And, like,
okay,
he's got, like, mimosas. And he's like, we're celebrating, Gabby. And she's like, Carlos is going to be in prison for maybe 8 years. And he's like, yeah, I know. And she's like, you are not, like, we don't know that you're the father of this,
yeah,
baby.
We don't know anything.
And then you find out that John brought a duffel bag.
He has luggage. He's ready to move in.
Oh my God.
I feel like the John storyline has gotten very muddy. Also, did you notice on the opening credits, Jesse Metcalf, John Tucker, has been replaced with Cody Cash, who plays Zach. Like, in the main credits.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, like, in the spot where normally Jesse Metcalf's name was, is John Tucker.
It's now Zach?
It's now Zach.
Oh,
Tucker.
Wow. That's interesting.
So
I didn't
Cash.
Notice that.
I, like, barely noticed it. So I should...
I thought you were going to be like, John Tucker is going to be recast with Zach.
No, I probably next time I might pay attention to see if there's any other main cast changes in the opening credits. But that was just one I noticed because it's the shot where the woman's holding all of the soups and they're falling out of her hand. That one, I just think that one's fun. But yeah, it got a little muddy for me because there was that shift of him accepting that he wasn't ever going to be the father of this baby. And it seemed like it was put to rest. And then he immediately was like, no, I want to be the dad.
It's because the writers went, that's not juicy enough. That's not dirty laundry enough.
We need a little bit more juice. So yeah, he brought a fucking duffel bag. Gabby is like, get the fuck out. I do not want you anymore. You've made this very not fun for me. I said, I'm already kind of loving Gabby. Mm-hmm. And she just throws him out, him and his duffel bag. I also write, is no one gonna notice John just outside in his little panties?
No, because remember we established this last season. Mm-hmm. People are only allowed outside at certain hours of the day.
You're right.
And then we cut really quick to Lynette. We find out she has an interview literally the next day after she decided she was going back to work.
Way to go.
Wow. I wish I could have an interview.
Truly. And Tom is doing some parenting and Lynette is trying to sort of comment on his parenting and he gets really defensive. He's like, I'm the captain now, bitch. No. I also wrote, I swear he is the most self-conscious and defensive man I've ever seen in my entire life. But Lynette like lets go of it pretty quickly. She's like, all right, you're right, you're the dad, you're parenting, I'm gonna go get a job.
And then we cut to Bree. It's 9 a.m She picks up the phone, she dials, and she says, I have some news. Rex died.
I think, doesn't she go, sorry to call you so early.
Yeah.
Rex is dead.
She's like, I have some news. Rex died.
Bree is wild.
She's wild. She's also like she's grieving. Sad. And I feel like she just doesn't know how to handle that.
I love her.
Yeah, so do
I.
I
want to give her a hug. This moment was so fucking funny to me. Because it pretty quickly cuts from that to the Lynette telling the other girls. So I guess she called Lynette and then Lynette's gonna tell Susan and Gabby, and they're like, Bree needs some space, she's really busy. And then Gabby just looks over and Bree's just dissociating in the front yard with like a whole thing of milk. I know it's not funny, but I also thought the shot of just like this wide shot of the street with Bree just fully dissociating in the front lawn was very funny to me.
Yeah, and it's also sad because like near the end she's kind of just like, oh, I have this thing of skim milk, and Rex was the only one who drank it.
Does anybody want it?
No? What a waste.
Yeah, it's wild.
And the women are like, listen, if you need to like break down, you can. Do and it. She's like, I can't. And they're like, why? And she goes, that's why. And then we see a shot of a car coming down the lane, and Rex's mother is like out the window.
Going, like her just screaming like a ghost Bree's name. I wrote, why is this the funniest fucking thing I've ever seen?
Literally.
It was so, just her, the woman just outside the window just screaming Bree's name was very funny. And this woman is Rex's mother.
Yes.
I think Phyllis is her name. I wrote down Phyllis a couple of times.
And she's so rude.
Yeah, I see, it was so funny. I hated her in this episode.
Yeah.
But in this moment, I liked her.
Yeah.
Only because I wrote, it made me think of the Golden Girls episode where Dorothy's brother dies. Spoilers for Golden Girls, one of my favorite TV shows. And Sophia, their mother, is like weeping. And she says parents aren't supposed to outlive their children, which I think it's true. I think that it's like really sad when you're a parent whose child dies. As, you know, even no matter how old he is. You know, we're assuming Rex was like late 40s maybe. That's young. But then, so in this moment, I really felt for her, but then that was before I got to know her. Because by the end of the episode, I fucking hated Phyllis.
Yeah,
I thought she was so awful.
I think when I said she was rude, I think I was,
No, she's so rude.
Well, she is, but I think I was also dipping into the next scene a little bit.
Oh, maybe. I just hated her this whole time, basically. Yeah.
Because the next scene is we go to a hip and fresh and colorful office, which is how you know it's like a cool new place.
Cool.
And Lynette's got to do her interview, and we have this woman whose titties are out.
Titties are out. I wrote, it's so distracting for me personally.
Literally.
Liz, this actress is Jolie Fisher, and she's my gay root, I think.
I know.
I've told you about this, but I want to tell the podcast. She was in the 2003, 2002 movie Inspector Gadget with Matthew Broderick. She was the love interest in that movie.
99.
Fuck. Well, I was 4, and then she made me gay because I was obsessed with that movie. I just was so enamored by her, and I think that she's the reason why I'm into redheads.
That's fair.
Her in that movie. So seeing Julie Fisher here, I'm like, wow, all my gay root from when I was a child just floods back to me. So her boobs were highly distracting because she was like wearing the lowest cut shirt, and it was like she was pushing them up and in, yeah, and then laying on a table. So like her tits were just on the table.
It's a power move.
She was like, if she looks at my tits, she doesn't get the job. Looks at them just once and she's fucking out. That's how she gets the weak ones out.
But we find out pretty soon throughout this interview process that she's parent phobic.
She is parent phobic. She kind of throws a lot of shade at Lynette, yeah, being like, I could never have kids and a career, so I chose my career.
Yeah,
it's like, and okay, fuck off.
She's like, I don't know if you can handle this job because your babies aren't gonna be able to come here with you.
Sorry, your little fucking babies are just gonna be sucking at your fucking face all day. So you can't come be a hot, sexy advertising agent like me.
And Lynette's
Nina,
like,
Fletcher. What a name.
Lynette's like, listen, I'm hot and my kids aren't gonna interfere, so you can suck my ass.
I wish that was the exact line.
Just Lynette being like, suck I'm my hot. Ass. Suck my ass.
And Nina Fletcher's like, all right, let's okay. do it. I did write down for her lesbian in the episode nominee only because I love her and she's kind of like mean.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that means she's a lesbian.
We can chuck her in the bucket
because I have some other nominees
so
later.
Do I.
Yeah. I think we both probably have similar nominees, yes, later in the episode.
And then we cut to, and I cannot stress this enough.
Oh, she asks Lynette to come back tomorrow.
Oh, yes.
She's like, I can't really make the decision. Ed wants to. I'm assuming Ed is the boss, I guess. So she invites Lynette for a second interview.
Yes.
So that's important.
And then we cut to, and I cannot stress this enough, I don't mean to do this to her.
What's up?
I wrote down Denise. When I was watching this, in all
for
seriousness.
Danielle?
Yes. And like, I was talking to you like the other day, and
you never. I love that you cannot remember Danielle's name.
I cannot. And I want to apologize.
She's
to this
had
actor.
Like 4 lines, so it's fine.
But like, she, Danielle's here.
Danielle
Andrew's
is here.
Here.
Danielle hasn't Finland's been around for so long. I think is the last time, correct me if I'm wrong, the last time we saw Danielle was when Julie took her home after the party.
Yes.
Which was a long time ago.
Cause that she was the body snatched.
She did, because that was the episode we found out Andrew's gay.
Yeah.
And then he had a whole arc and Danielle was just nowhere to be found.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, Danielle's back.
She's in New York.
being a model.
Being a model.
So Danielle is back. Danielle Denise is back.
And Phyllis brought mementos from his youth. And like, she brought his like old tie from school.
It's so gross looking.
And she really wants him to be buried in it. And Bree's like, no, he would be wearing a Versace tie.
A little Versace tie.
And she also like has his old porn mags.
That was fucking weird.
That's fucked up.
What did Andrew say? He was like, looks like my dad was in a big tits. Like,
yeah,
something weird like that. I was,
yeah,
like, okay, homo, chill out.
Why'd he marry you?
Like, that was... Well, no, Phyllis said that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because he was like, oh, my dad like big knockers or something,
yeah,
insane.
Big jahoobies.
Big jabunga bangas. And then Phyllis was like, that's why I never understood why he married your mother.
Because she has the tiniest boingo woingos I've ever seen.
Those pinky ponkies are teeny tiny.
Those Chris Colfers, those Kia Sorrentos.
My tits are definitely Kia Sorrentos for sure. I'm sorry, I just grabbed my titties in front of you.
Hey, it's okay.
You're getting a lot of my boobs this episode.
It's okay, we're here, we're together.
Thank
I
you.
Love you.
Thank you. But yeah, so she's being a bitch. Like,
yes.
Phyllis is annoying as hell, and this is weird. She's weird.
And
I don't like her.
You really get the sense that she just hates Bree.
Yeah, she does. And we'll find out more later why she hates Bree, and it's for stupid, gross reasons. So,
yes.
So, fuck Phyllis. I don't know. I don't like her. I liked her once, and then I hated her the rest of the episode.
And then we cut to Carlos and Gabby. Gabby is talking to him while he's in jail, and he, like, won't talk to her.
He's giving her the silent treatment.
And she's like, listen, so I had a little affair. fair. So what? It's not like anyone died. Which someone did!
Someone died. His mother died because of your affair. I literally wrote that down. I was like, Gabby, I don't hate Gabby. I love Gabby. I love her, but bitch, somebody died. His mother died because of your affair.
Jesus Christ.
That was just funny. I wonder if they did that. They had to have done that on purpose, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And like when she's like, listen, you had an affair too, but your mistress was your work.
I actually agreed with Carlos when he was like, okay, fuck off. Like, yeah. He got up and she was like, okay, I get it. That's weak. I agreed with Carlos. That was a pretty weak excuse.
Yeah. Gabby really wants to start over though.
Yeah. And he says he wants a paternity test. And that's all he really says. He's mm-hmm. like, just prove to me that I'm the dad. And yeah. then leaves.
And then we cut to
Brie and
Applewhite?
Yes. I was trying to think of another funny name for Danielle.
Oh, Chanel. I don't know.
Brie and Duncan, her daughter. I don't know. yes. And they're bringing the Applewhites some cookies.
Yes. Classic, like, Brie welcoming the new neighbor. I think it's so sad, though, because it's like, also, if you think about it.
What's up?
Like, in the grand scheme of cinematography and storytelling, like, Kiki's are Kiki's.
that's my cat.
I got Kiki on the brain.
Kiki on the brain.
Cookies are pretty easy to make.
Yeah.
And, like, muffins are, like, a bit more elaborate. So maybe she just didn't have, like, the strength to make anything
else. Yeah, I wrote down muffins. And then later in the scene when they revealed it was cookies, I was like, shit, Brie did cookies.
Yeah. You can, yeah, if you want to.
No, I was saying, like, Brie, you know, wants to welcome them to the neighborhood, but also has ulterior motives. Mm-hmm. She says that the organist from the church can't play today, and Edie mentioned, I guess, that Betty was a concert pianist and asks Betty to play for the funeral, and she immediately is like, of course I will.
Yeah,
she's very sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Danielle and the son had a little interaction, which I want to tell you I'm concerned about.
Why are you concerned?
Because why would they put Danielle in this scene if she were to not have a storyline involving this boy?
I don't know.
Because the way that he was looking at her, I mean, and the way she would like put her little
They were checking each other out. They were checking each other out for sure.
Danielle getting a storyline is not something I anticipated. I anticipated her being written out of the show for mysterious reasons.
You never could have predicted Danielle getting a storyline. No. Yeah, they were checking each other out, and he definitely was trying to connect with her when he was like, yeah, my dad died too. Like,
yeah.
I get it. And Betty shoots him a bit of a look that we understand in a minute.
Because when Brie and Danielle leave, Miss Applewhite, I don't remember her first name.
Betty.
Betty is like, nice touch with the dead dad thing.
Like, why would you say your dad's like, dead? Yeah. Like something. Like, so clearly the dad's not dead, and he says, "I think it would help with our cover story."
Yeah.
What?
And at this point, I would like to chuck Betty into the bucket for lesbian of the episode.
Ooh,
because I can't believe that their big secret is that she is a single mother who's a lesbian, and she had a donor, and like that's why there's no dad, and that's the big bad secret.
Oh my God. Liz, I did not have her in it, but I love that you chucked her in. I like Betty, and I love Alfre Woodard.
I just want like a full bucket for the first
full
epi.
Bucket of this epi. Oh yes. Remember in last season we had some episodes where there was nobody but nipples, you know?
Chuck some, those nips in the bucket. Chuck
those nips in the bucket. So now we have two nominees for lesbian. Two full human beings.
Not just nips.
Not just their nipples. Their nipples are included.
Yes.
Especially Nina, because hers were hanging out in the scene.
I can't.
I just pantomimed me pulling my top down. That's why Liz is reacting this way. I love that. But yeah, no, they were definitely, like, Danielle and Matthew were checking each other out. And the thing is, like, just the way the actors look, like, I understand that Matthew's supposed to be a teenager, but that actor,
he's older than her.
He looks like he's in his like mid-20s. He's like very hot, but he looks old. And then
late 20s.
Yeah. And then Danielle like looks like a 16-17 year old. So just the look of the two actors is kind of discombobulating for me. But way to go, Danielle, get a storyline, girl. Get a storyline.
And then we cut to Susan. She's got a little hammer. We throw her in the bucket.
Susan with a hammer. Dyke.
And so we see her hammering a little like security sign into the lawn. Yeah. And Julie's like, since when did we get a security system? And Susan's like, Mike thought it would be a good deterrent.
Yeah, in case Zach comes back. So they haven't seen Zach clearly since everything went down.
Yeah. And Julie is like, Mom, I gotta tell you something.
Julie.
Mike is lying to you. Because Susan also thinks that Mike is out with the cops right now doing rounds, right?
I think she thinks he's looking for Zach. Yeah. Like doing a search party, I think. Yeah.
And Julie's basically like, listen, Mom, Mike is lying to you. He made it sound like it was all your fault to the cop.
Yeah. And Susan, I'm glad that Susan believes her. I'm glad that it's not that weird. Like, no, he would never do that. Like, I think she wants to feel that way, but she believes her daughter.
Because I think ultimately, like, Susan, like, whatever Julie would say, she would believe her because she's her daughter.
Yeah.
And, like, I think Susan is good in that way as a mother. And, like, I know that she's, like, the kid and, like, Julie plays more of the mom role. But I think, like, actively trusting her child, I think, like,
It's good. Yeah, I like Susan as a mom in that sense. But that's kind of all we get of that scene right now. Because then we cut to Gabby at the hospital. And I want to say I did put this big titty goth GF.
I did. I wrote, thank God, finally a goth.
Yeah, I put her in the bucket for lesbian of the episode for me. Because I was just like, by default, any goth, she had vibes. Yeah. I'm going to give her a little nominee.
Chuck her in the little bucket.
Chuck her in the bucket for lesbian of the episode. I thought she was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And Gabby's trying to get a used paternity test
so that she can fake it
because she got photoshopped for Christmas, which I think was a hilarious line, and it was delivered perfectly.
Her saying she got photoshopped for Christmas,
so if you could just slip me someone else's test results, I can make my own. I got photoshopped for Christmas.
Killed me. Yes. Like, who bought her Photoshop for Christmas? I would never see
Carlos,
Gabby,
because he doesn't know what to get her. Another girl, woman on the lane, because like they just don't know what to get her.
I would never see Gabby and assume Photoshop would be what I need to buy her.
I would love Photoshop for Christmas. I would love Adobe Premiere Pro.
Anybody
for
wants
Christmas.
To buy Liz Adobe Premiere Pro for Christmas, do it. So that was funny, but she wants to get a random test so she can Photoshop it to make it have Carlos's information. And this woman is like, just because I look whatever way I look and you're perceiving me whatever way you're perceiving me does not mean I condone what you're doing, so fuck right off.
Yeah.
That goth was like, get out of here.
And Gabby turns around and sees a woman with a piece of paper crying. And Gabby goes, I'm right there with you.
Girl, I get it. Paternity
like,
test.
And the girl sobbing is like, they implanted a lesbian's egg inside me instead of my own egg, and now my husband thinks the baby's gonna be gay.
I wrote lesbian of the episode, the off-screen lesbian whose egg is inside this woman.
I wrote lesbian of the episode, the baby.
That's five nominees for this episode alone. But I don't know. I'm not quite sure how fertility things work, but why would they be implanting her egg in her? Well, was it maybe a surrogate egg? I'm just confused why she would be getting her own egg implanted in herself.
Well, sometimes people freeze eggs if they don't know.
And then get them back.
Yeah,
okay.
because if you don't know if like you want children or whatever, sometimes people freeze eggs. Like, so even if they're unable to have children, they can give their egg to like a surrogate.
Yeah.
So like it's still like their baby.
And I'm now thinking about this. That feels like a very different process than paternity of a fetus. So how would the form Gabby takes be anywhere near similar to what a paternity
test? I have no idea, man.
Well, whatever. Those are two new...
Also, did they implant the egg with her husband's semen still?
That's confusing. Because then, did they give the husband's semen to the gay baby? And then the lesbians couple.
Well, because they needed an egg anyway. So it was a lesbian's egg that she was giving to her lover.
To her lover.
I guess, like, so it could be, like, both of their baby. And so, like,
that's confusing.
And so I know that I think that you can.
I need a chart of whose egg is in who, whose sperm is where, who's the gay baby. Both of them is the answer. I need a chart of what's going on. Basically, it's confusing, but I did think that nominating the off-screen lesbians as well as now the baby that will be born is very funny for Lesbian the Episode.
So do I.
That's five nominees.
That's five nominees. We are popping. Do you have any more?
I don't know. Maybe let's feel it out. I might. Yeah. I don't off the top of my head, but maybe I'll just think of one while we're talking.
Yeah. And then Gabby is basically like, "Do you want to go out to lunch?" And she gets the paper.
The paper, yeah. And the Reverend is back. We cut to another scene. The Reverend is back. He's getting some tea. He's talking to Phyllis and Bree about the eulogy for Rex.
Yes. And Phyllis has 15 pages of anecdotes about Rex's childhood.
Yes. And specifically his childhood.
Yes. Because Bree starts looking them over and it's all stuff before college and before he got married. And this is what I wrote down that I will strike down Mother Rex with my thumb.
Strike down Mother Rex. Yeah, I wrote Phyllis as being a fucking bitch with like five exclamation points.
Yeah, she literally was like, I just made sure I wrote down the happiest times in his life.
The Reverend is picking up on these vibes. The Reverend is like, I just want to sip my tea and not be here. But Phyllis is being highly rude about their marriage, just completely disregarding that Rex was happy at times. Like, surely when we, yes, of course, when we met them, right, they were going through a really unhappy phase in their marriage.
Yeah, but we were also,
they got through it. We were also led to believe that they had plenty of happy years before this when we met the characters. And yes, they ended up getting over it and becoming happy together again. So, like, Phyllis is just being a fucking asshole.
She truly tells her that, like, the last years of his life were miserable because of Bree.
Does she know that he cheated?
I don't
like
think
that's
so.
Something I was hoping Bree would throw out, being like, well, he cheated, so like we're not, I'm not, you know, I don't know. I guess it's probably rude to say to his mom if he just died, but like, I'm just curious. She's acting like Bree was the only problem in the marriage. I'm not saying that Bree was a saint in it. Like, Bree had issues that needed to be addressed, but Rex cheated on her.
Yes,
like, fully. So it wasn't like, it takes two to tango. Like, they both fucked up their marriage.
But Queen Bree
said,
cut out toxic family members, and she uninvites her to the funeral.
I loved that.
That was so
good.
Wild.
Get the fuck out.
Yeah, she Phyllis. Was like, I'm hiring security. You're not allowed
That was
in.
So fucking funny. I would have loved to see a scene of Phyllis trying to break through security.
Yeah. And the Reverend is like, do you think you're maybe going a little too far, Bree? And Bree is like, if you say no to this, I'm going non-denominational with my church. Don't test me.
I wrote down everything. I will go non-denominational so fast it'll make your head spin. Great line.
Hell yeah.
Then I wrote, cut to Edie in yellow. Oh, she looks so good in yellow. That was my next note.
Hell yeah.
She's at the construction site.
Yeah, and her girlfriend comes up.
Her girlfriend, Susan.
She's trying to get deets.
Yeah.
Edie,
this is like her only scene in the whole episode, really, right? Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, and I know that I am attracted to Edie, so sometimes maybe I'm just perceiving things more sexually than they're supposed to be. But was this interaction like Edie being into a like hostage role play thing?
I don't know.
Because she was like, I don't know. I just feel like she was getting like horned up asking the questions, being like, well, did he tie you up? Did he hold you at gunpoint? Did he?
Yeah.
And it just seemed like, I don't know. It just felt
I got that too.
It felt like she was getting weirdly horny about it. And I was like,
maybe
what?
She was just used to reading her lines that way.
If she has lines that aren't horny, she makes them horny accidentally. Yes. Yeah, I don't know.
Hi, how are you doing?
Oh, how's your baby? Oh, I gotta get my taxes done. I can't even do it without laughing. I don't know. It just felt like she was getting really horny about this, and I couldn't figure out why. And then this was the only interaction she had the whole episode.
Yeah. And basically Mike comes out.
Yeah, Mike's there.
And Susan questions him, and Mike says that he doesn't want to press charges against Zach. And then he tells her the story that Paul told him.
Yeah. But I don't think she's connected the dots about the paternity of Zach
yet.
Right? Yeah, because that's later.
Because we get a call
This shook me.
This shook me, but...
to my fucking core.
Like, the cops called, right? Or the coroner's called?
The cops called.
Cops called. They have a body that...
needs to be identified.
Needs to be identified. And they want Mike and Susan to come in and verify that it's Zach.
Yeah, because, well, they don't really even really... he doesn't even say all that. He just, like, puts the phone down and goes, Zach is dead. And I was like, what yeah. the fuck? So but I screamed when that happened.
I said this.
Mm-hmm.
We did not see Zach die.
No, he just ran out of the freaking...
I didn't think he was dead at this point.
I was using meta knowledge to also know he's not dead.
Well, I didn't know. Yeah. So, like, just going through this episode, I was like,
he also in my brain, he... and I guess...
also, if he's in the main credits. I was about
to
say,
this isn't even meta knowledge. He's literally been added to the main credits of the... yeah. Like, he's has top billing now in the show. Not top billing, but you know what I mean? He's in the main credits. So that was another reason why when they said Zach is dead, I literally was like, he is in the main credits. Why would they kill him yeah. if they're upgrading his job title, whatever. So, yeah.
And it's not, because literally the scene after that is us...
the coroner's office, yeah.
...seeing it, that it's not Zach.
It's literally a 35-year-old man. This man looks yes. so old.
But the way that Mike looks, like, at this guy and, like, the way that he reacts, Susan puts it together.
Detective Suze, she yeah. puts... because, like, it was this sort of, like, mixture of, like, relief but horror, because yeah. he was so scared that Zach might be dead, his son, his chance to have a son might be gone. And yeah, Detective Suze, she puts those dots together.
And Susan's like, I have to go, I'll take a cab home.
Yeah. Oh, well, doesn't he tell her, like, because doesn't she walk up and she's like, is he your son? And he's like,
I thought that was in a later scene.
Oh, I don't know, I have it written down for here,
because that's when she breaks up with him.
Oh, I have that written down here.
Oh,
I thought she asked him here. She's just like, is he your son? And he's like, yeah, I haven't known for long. And like, Deidre, this is the scene where he says, Deidre told me she got an abortion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I guess she didn't. And he's like, I don't know. He was like, I wanted to hurt Paul the way he hurt Deidre. Mm-hmm. But then when I realized, like, he took care of my son for so many years, I just couldn't do it. And I was like, oh,
yeah.
I also wrote the scoring and the acting, and this is very beautiful. Yeah. Like, it just was a good scene. The way yeah. it mixed, it just was a really well acted scene.
Mike's but lost then, so many people in his life.
He's lost a lot of people.
He lost and his wife. He lost Deidre.
Yeah, because Deidre wasn't even his wife. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And then possibly now his son.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, also depending on how close he feels to Noah, like, Noah's gonna die soon.
Oh, no, yeah, because yeah. he has a tumor. He has, like, I was tumor. Like, what, Mackenzie?
Yeah, no. Well, Noah's been saying, I'm dying yeah. and stuff. And but yeah, but then, yeah, Susan's like, this is too much. I have to leave.
Yes. And then we cut to...
a great scene.
Yes. So it's Bree in her kitchen. Andrew comes up with Denise in the background, just fucking sobbing.
Denise.
You noticed, though. I, like, didn't purposefully, like, say
no,
that.
You just said Denise as you were speaking. No, it's...
I really do apologize to this actor.
This I think her name's Joy Lauren. She's going to listen to our podcast and start crying as hard as she was in this scene.
We get canceled twice in one episode.
Cancel them. Cancel them.
But he's basically like, you got to let her come. You got to.
He has a great line where he's like, I'm sure she's a bitch, but she's family, so she's our bitch.
Yeah.
I thought that was a fun line. Danielle is weeping.
Yes.
Like, sobbing, like, hyperventilation weeping. And she's like, if you do this, I'll never forgive you. And I just feel like that's a little too much for the, like, what acting note did they possibly give her? Because yeah. that was a little much for this scene. But Andrew's like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, literally. He's like, did I ask for your help?
He's so mean.
He's funny, though. I think I like it's funny. Andrew.
He's very funny, but he's so mean.
We need a mean person.
We need a mean little gay. Yes. And that's Andrew. He's our mean little gay son. I don't know. I don't like Phyllis. I don't want her there.
No, I don't like her either. But Bree... caves.
Yeah, and she goes and extends the olive branch to Phyllis.
And then we cut to Tom on the ground. He threw out his back.
Yeah, he did.
And it sucks because Lynette has to go to her interview, and so she's trying to be like, you have to do it.
You can't.
I once, like, I took the kids trick-or-treating with 104 degree fever. Like, please, you have to get up. And he can't.
I wrote that his shirt is the same color of his face, and it made me laugh.
Yeah.
He, like, matched his shirt because he was just, yeah, it just made me laugh. And yeah, I guess he's just can't get up. And so she's like, fuck it. And she just grabs Penny and is like, gonna go to the interview with the baby, I guess.
And that's exactly what she does, because then we go to the office and we meet Stu.
I like Stu's vibes. He seems like a dummy and I love him.
But basically she's like, you have to watch this baby.
Yeah, have fun.
Have fun. And she goes into her interview
with Ed Ferrara.
Yeah.
What a name.
I know. And she's trying to do the interview, but then she looks over and Stu left Penny on the fucking desk while he's like flirting it up with like another like, coworker.
That was very funny.
So essentially, like, Lynette like goes, gets Penny, comes back and is like, I just have to change her diaper. It'll be 2 minutes and then we can continue. And Ed's like, no, we can't. I got a plane to catch. So she does like a pitch. She pitches herself while she changes this diaper.
Hell yeah. And she kills it. I mean, she kills it because she's like clearly impressive. But also, I do like that her, what she just was like, you need to be philanthropists and have a website. That was like her pitch. And I was like, okay. It was very, very 2005, I guess. Also, I wrote, once again, Nina's cleavage is fucking wild. I hope this is all season long.
I wrote, why cleavage does this watch? Woman dress like this?
Nina cleavage watch.
That's so funny.
That's my personal thing I'm doing for myself. Yeah, but I mean, Ed seems impressed. I mean, Nina is over it, right? Nina's like, thinks she's an idiot because she has had children, because she's parent phobic.
Yes.
But Ed's impressed and hires her on the fucking spot. He's like, cool, see you tomorrow. Take that office. I'll see you later.
She gets a whole fucking office.
A very nice one, too.
And then we cut to Carlos and Gabby. And Gabby's like, listen, I got your paternity test. Here you go. And he's like, it's not enough. What you did to me is unacceptable. And the fact that Carlos thinks that, like, cheating is worse than tricking someone into having a baby. Like, they're both bad.
They're both bad.
But one is worse than the other.
And Gabby calls him out on that. Gabby's like, you did something really fucked up. Also, does Carlos forget that he, like, worked with criminals and, like, and what did he do? He, like,
he was using money laundered
using slave labor. He, like, endangered their entire well-being. Like, Carlos has done much worse than a little cheating.
Yes.
I mean, Gabby like, did like, do it a little statutory rape.
Yes.
But
they are both, they're both bad.
And they kind of had that moment. I actually thought it was funny because they both were like, God, we're both bad people. Good thing we're rich. And that was how the scene ended.
Yeah.
It was a little weird.
Weird. Remember when they tried out being poor?
hey, poor is just a state of mind, Liz.
And then my next note, and I don't remember why I wrote this note, and maybe you can help me figure it out.
Yeah, what's up?
My next note is three straps, Susan.
Three strap Susan.
Yeah.
Let me see. My next note is, Mike is getting the paper and Susan is sitting outside of his house and scares him. Susan apologizes for how she freaked out earlier and she's upset and she says that she understands that he'll probably want to be present in Zach's life if Zach's his son. And she kind of breaks up with Mike. She's like, I don't think we can move in together because I can't be around Zach, but I want you to have a son. So I can't figure out. And then she went, and here's my three dildos, three straps,
three strap-ons that you now have to keep because I bought them in hopes for that we
you.
Were
I was
going to
peg you, and now I can't. Mike would get pegged.
Look at them.
I feel like Mike would get pegged for sure. So maybe, maybe it was the fact that Susan has three strap-ons. Three strap Susan. They do call her.
Can we get a shirt that says three strap Susan?
It's just Susan with three strap-ons around her, like bandoliers, like she's bandoliers. A fucking cowboy. I'm a dildo cowboy, baby. Like in the holsters for the guns. Yes. It's just dildos. So she has strap-ons like bandoliers and then dildo guns.
So the strap-ons are bandoliers, but they're also like they hold like the tiny little bullet vibrators. And then her holsters have dicks in them.
Three strap Susan's incredible. She's an old-timey fucking cowboy outlaw.
Yeah. So do her guns shoot dicks or are her dicks just the guns?
I think the dick is the gun.
Okay.
So it's a dildo, but it's also a gun.
Okay.
We need to make a wanted outlaw poster for Three Strap Susan.
So we have to find somebody who does not say for work art. NSFW art of three strap suits. God, I want that.
I wish I could tell you why you wrote that note. What's your next note?
My next note is she's breaking up with Mike because she can't be around Zach.
I don't know why you wrote three strap suits. Does her shirt have three straps on it?
She might have like a lot of straps showing. That might be what it is.
I don't know. I'd like to think it's just she has three strap-ons.
Yeah, me too.
But the gist of that scene is that, Susan and Mike, I couldn't tell if they broke up or if they just were not going to move in together, but maybe we're still going to date. I can't really tell what the vibe was there.
Yeah.
But she was sad about it nonetheless. She was weeping. He's sad. Yeah. Everyone's sad.
And then, here, wait, give me one second. Oh, yeah, I went back.
Okay.
There's a shot where she has just three straps showing.
We'll post three straps, Susan, on our social media.
Outfit watch.
Outfit watch, but also I like triple strap on, yeah, Susan,
so,
as well.
So do I. So, we can cut that if we don't want the real thing in there. And then we cut to the funeral.
Rex's corpse looks weird as fuck.
Well, it's a
fake
dummy.
Person. I know, but it looks weird.
It's a funeral. It's exactly like the one we had for him.
Exactly like it. Like, they should have just played the audio of our In Memoriam. It would have been a lot better.
Yeah. I can edit that.
I can take the song. Edit our song. I can't believe that they didn't put the song you wrote for him in.
I'll make an edit.
Okay, thank you.
I would also just like to put out there Edie Hat Watch, Gabby Hat Watch.
Edie Hat Watch. Edie Cleavage Watch, too. Yeah. Her tits were out at this funeral, which feels inappropriate, but I love it. The tie is on. It's ugly.
Bree is like, I left him an hour ago. What happened?
Phyllis is a bitch.
She's fucking wild.
That's an ugly tie. If I was a dead person and I had to wear that color combo all my corpsey life, I'd be very sad about it.
But it's all right. It's okay because Bree stands up when they're going to take his coffin.
Oh, it's so... This scene is incredible.
It's incredible. She's scoping throughout the whole church. Goes up to the pew that Lynette and Tom are in, and she goes, "Give me your tie," to Lynette, or not, to Tom.
Lynette going, "Do it." Yeah. It was so fucking funny.
It was a masterpiece.
It was incredible. I loved this scene. The whole sequence was fucking... They took their time with it.
Props him up. She replaces his tie. And she's like, "Now you look very handsome." It was wild, but it's so sad.
I wrote, "I'm so sad about Brex. I'm like really sad he's dead." Yeah. I'm like actually sad that Rex died. And I know I talked about it a lot. We had a whole In Memoriam. But I'm sad he's dead. Yeah. And like, this was a sad moment because like, it was funny and wild. But when she laid him down and she was happy with how he looked and she just had him pat her hand on his chest, I was like, that's so sad.
Yeah.
I'm sad. I miss Rex. I miss Brex. I can't believe I'm like this.
And then we get the tastiest, weirdest bit of
the episode. Yes, because the ladies are walking home. They're just walking on the lane. Clearly, Susan told the girls about everything about Mary Alice, about how she killed somebody, who Deidre was, everything. And they kind of bring back that, how well do we really know our neighbors theme, as the fucking camera like stays with the women but then goes past them and into the Applewhite house.
And Betty is playing the piano. She plays beautifully. A beautiful white grand piano.
It's a gorgeous piano. And also she played very beautifully at the funeral too. Yeah. She's a really good piano player.
Her son comes in with a tray of food and like a little flower.
Yeah, and she's like, "You're so kind that you would do that small gesture even though, you know, you thought nobody would notice." Like, it was a kind of weird scene, but she seems like proud of him because he made this. It looks like it was a nice looking meal. Yeah. The meal was fancy.
I thought it was for her.
I did too.
Sorry for that spoiler.
The spoiler in 2 minutes. She goes into a drawer and gives him the gun. And she's like, "You take the gun, I'll take the tray."
Yeah. I wrote all caps, "Gun."
Gun.
But basically they go down to the basement. Like in fucking Texas Chainsaw Massacre or some shit. There's a door in their basement.
Locked?
With a lock.
Huge lock
they
on it.
They undo it. They put the tray down. And, like, a person in shackles reaches for the tray.
And that's the last thing we see, right?
Yeah.
They have a fucking prisoner in their basement? Yeah,
Parasite.
It's Parasite, starring Alfred Woodard. Yes. But that's the end of the episode.
That's why I want to watch more. I'm so confused.
Do you want to make a prediction? Like, what do you think this means? Because I know what it means. I know who this is. But, like, what... Do you have any predictions? And everyone, this is, you know, spoiler free, so Liz does not know.
It looked like a man's arm.
Okay.
Just because I don't think Desperate Housewives would have any non-binary.
The first non-binary character in Desperate Housewives is the prisoner in the basement of the Apple White House. Congrats!
It could be, like, her husband. Maybe he was, like, abusive, and maybe they're, like, getting back at him.
That's interesting. I think that's an interesting prediction. Because that would make sense, being like, why would you say that your father's dead? He's in our fucking basement.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So that's my prediction.
I'm having a poker face.
I think that would be cool.
I like when I just, like, affirm your ideas, but I don't give you any spoilers. It's my favorite part of listening to your predictions. That's cool. But that was the end of the episode.
Yeah.
It was a tasty morsel of an episode.
Oh, so tasty.
Oh, so tasty. So, we are Wisteria Gays, and if you want to find us on social media, you can find us at our new handles. If you already followed us on our old handles, you still follow us. Don't worry about it. But if you want to follow us, you can find us at Wisteria Gays on Twitter and at Wisteria Gays _ on Instagram. And if you are the man who has the Wisteria Gays handle on Instagram, let us have it, please.
Give us a number.
Give us a number. We'll pay it. as well as our website, WisteriaGaze.com.
And you want to know what's on that tasty little website?
What's on that tasty little website?
We got merch.
We got merch.
I don't know if the old shirts are still up.
I have the old name shirt archived. And then we have, like, the same type of shirt with the new name.
Oh, okay.
So it's up there. So hell, if you want to get a Wisteria Gaze shirt, it's there. As well as our Fairview High Abstinence Club.
Yeah. Check out that tasty new shirt then.
Tasty new shirt.
And check out the three-strap Susan shirt, which I assume is coming soon.
One day we'll have a three-strap Susan shirt.
It is an NSFW shirt, but some people are into it.
And there's something else on that website too. A little linky to our Patreon.
Oh my God, our Patreon.
Our new Patreon.
We launched our Patreon last week as, like, part of the season one wrap-up. And if you didn't, like, listen or watch that, because we also made it a video, go over and check it out.
Yeah, if you want to support the show and just get some fun stuff every month, check out our Patreon. It's also patreon.com/WisteriaGaze.
Yeah, we do some really cool stuff, like shout outs. We have video postcards and stuff like that. So,
and speaking of that, I think we should shout out our awesome patrons from our first week of Patreon.
Oh, yeah.
So our awesome patrons for our first week of our Patreon, we want to shout you out. Shout out, Lisa. We love you.
Talia, thank you.
Tom, you're an icon.
And Annie. Annie.
What if we start just doing compliments, being like, your eyes?
One day when we have 100 patrons.
Hey, this will be, if we have 100 patrons, I will gladly spend 20 minutes shouting all of you out, because I love you. So thank you to our 4 patrons that are our patrons for our first week of Patreon. You all are awesome. Thank you for supporting the show.
And if you want to find us personally, you can find me, Liz, anywhere on social media at The Pigeon Wizard.
You can find me at Mackenzie Wilkes.
Mackenzie, I have a story for you.
Tell me.
The year is 1307.
Okay, that was a while ago. Okay.
Just a little bit.
700 years ago. Okay.
The newspaper was just invented. Don't look it up.
Okay, okay.
2 people sat in a room somewhere, and somebody watched them. And that person who watched these 2 people talk was in charge of the newspaper, and they loved watching these 2 people talk so much that they wrote about them in the newspaper, and that was the first iTunes review.
Holy shit. Holy shit.
I got there.
Oh my gosh. Whoa.
And all that to say is, I think we should celebrate reviews.
Reviews.
We love reviews.
We love reviews.
We love reading them. They make our days. And usually at the end of every episode, we pose a question that's totally optional.
Fully optional.
For you to just, like, get the juices flowing
for
your reviews.
Get the juices flowing for your little reviewee.
And I think the last time was just, like, what was your
favorite
moment?
Moments of the seasons.
And I want to hear Oh, I don't know. What should the new season, new question be?
So I could be simple and I could ask, like, what are your predictions? But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to ask, what are you keeping in your basement?
Oh.
On Wisteria Lane. So you live on Wisteria Lane. What are you keeping in your Wisteria Lane basement?
What's in your basement?
Three Strap Susan's sex dungeon.
Hell yeah.
Is in my basement. It was a room I had. Three Strap Susan came to me, wanted to rent it out. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, fine. Little did I know what it would become. Yeah. But I'm fully okay with it. I kind of work a little bit as like as a doorman, a bouncer. I make sure I pat everybody down, make sure everyone's safe. I give everyone condoms, send them downstairs.
Tell them the safe word.
I tell them the safe word. And then they go downstairs to Three Strap Susan's sex dungeon that I keep in my basement. Yeah. Mm. Cause I was like, I have the basement.
Yeah.
I might as well help make a little bit extra money.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're thinking about getting a sign put up soon. Yeah. So it's like a real business. So
that's nice.
Yeah, Three Strap Susan sex dungeon, you know?
the neon sign.
The neon
sign. I just
sign.
Imagine like a cowboy with a dildo like like, you
I
know,
can't believe we need to make that.
I want to see Three Strap Susan. I want to see her. That's what I have to go as for Halloween next year. Three
Liz.
Strap Susan.
Fuck, I'll be your mic to your Three Strap Susan.
In my basement.
Yeah, what's in your Wisteria Lane basement, Liz?
My Wisteria Lane basement. I have the competing sex dungeon with Ida and I. We run it as a friends with benefits business.
Oh my god, you're right across the street and we just like, we have to try to like lure people to our sex dungeon and we just...
Yeah, and what we do is we kind of just set Ida out with her booze and she just kind of vibes.
Ooh.
And gets people to come in.
Yeah, that's the difference. You two have a liquor license where we don't.
Yeah,
that's you guys definitely have that up on us.
Yeah.
You and Ida's sex dungeon. What's it called?
Eight Strap Ida's.
Eight Strap Ida?
Yeah.
Ida has eight straps?
Yeah, they're kind of, she uses them as kind of like, you know, like spider legs.
She's an octopus of strap-ons. I can't believe Eight Strap Ida.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow, there's a lot of sex dungeons on the lane.
There has to be.
There's
ever since Maisie Gibbons
got arrested, we've
got
to fill that hole of sexual
fill that
perversity.
Hole.
Yeah.
Oh, this is going on so long.
On that note,
feel free to leave us a review. it helps out the show. You don't have to answer the question, but to reiterate, the question is, what is in your
Wisteria Lane basement? Nothing to do about sex. We just made it that way.
I guess there's only two more things to say.
What is there left to say?
Mackenzie, I fucking love you.
I fucking love you.
I fucking love you.
I fucking love you.
And after that, all I have to say
is
stay juicy, everyone.
Oh, everybody, stay fucking juicy.